Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steeler site on the internet. And I'm David Todd from The Hammer Speaks. This is Season 2, Episode 24, as the Steelers prepare to play the Houston Texans down at Reliant Stadium. I think that's the name of it, Dave. Down at Reliant Stadium, 1 o'clock Sunday. Dave, great interview yesterday with Nick Schofield of HoustonTexans.com. He seems to know what he's talking about. Breaking down the Texans. You guys did a nice job. Sorry I couldn't be involved.
Yeah, that's all right. Duty called for you having to fly up for some debauchery up in New York this week, and I'm sorry to hear your luggage got lost, but you know, just go buy yourself some $30 underwear from Bloomingdale's.
Exactly. So the Steelers go into the Texans. Let's update everybody on where we are physically coming into the game. And let's take a look at some of the latest breaking news on the roster and some fines hitting the Steelers in the wallet. First, the injury report. Anything new on what we talked about on Wednesday in terms of who we thought would be available or not available?
You know, it's looking pretty much like we thought it would. Arnez Battle, evidently this knee, you know, we don't know the severity of it, but he's missed 2 days of practice. He's not looking good to play, which means Jericho Cotchery might could get him a helmet this week for the first time. Jonathan Scott and Doug Ligurski, Scott with the ankle, Ligurski with the shoulder, not looking good to go, missed 2 days. I would almost guarantee that Scott's going to be out. I guess Ligurski depends on what he does today, but I'm not looking for any good news on that. Brett Kiesel looks like he's going to be down again with that knee sprain. You know, I would be surprised if he goes today. Steve McClendon and Chris Carter were added to the injury report on Thursday. McClendon was out sick. I suspect he'll probably be back today. Chris Carter, you know, he's battled that hamstring a long time, and evidently it tightened back up on him, and he was added to the injury report yesterday as limited. Mike Wallace was back full practice with that rib cartilage problem, and that's it from the Steelers side of things. So, you know, looks like going to be down those couple of linemen like we thought this week.
Yeah, and let's talk just a minute about that. We'll do the game breakdown later, but let's talk about how the line's going to be set up and what the Steelers may or may not do here coming of the week. Before we get on the air, we talked a little bit about this big kid from Abilene Christian, Travis Turner, who was a free agent signee. He's the guy who's got three sets of twins, so getting an NFL game day paycheck would be a big deal for him. There's some talk about maybe adding him to the 53-man, but of course, what comes with that are salary cap issues, and you got to move somebody off the 53-man. What's the latest?
Yeah,
there?
I think you know, he was picking up some extra hitting and all, from what I understand from yesterday, and the speculation is that he could be activated this week. Now it sounds like Jamon Meredith is going to dress this week. We don't know about the other, you know, the second year lineman Chris Scott either. But you know, if Travis Turner was activated to the 53-man roster, you have to drop somebody there. There's not too many candidates to release unless you place somebody on IR. Now, you know, we don't know what the seriousness of the Arnez Battle injury is, but to me, he would probably be the only guy that would be a candidate to be placed on IR. He would still count against the salary cap, though, so you got to be damn sure he's going to be out an extended period of time. The other likelihood that I kind of narrowed it down on is either Chris Scott or the rookie Chris Carter. You know, you got to be careful here with the salary cap because, you know, players with 4 years accrued experience, you know, those salaries are now guaranteed, the base salary part. So it's still going to count against the cap, whereas guys with less time, they're not. So, that you know, you can't release Steve McClendon with Brett Kiesel down. So I guess it's going to come down to how many linemen that, you know, if indeed he's going to be, you know, promoted, which we don't know for sure and probably won't until late Friday, right, or Saturday. It's going to be either Chris Carter or Chris Scott, and it's going to depend on if Tomlin decides he needs eight offensive linemen or is only going to dress seven.
Yeah, I mean, the question obviously is, if you're going to move a guy from the practice squad to the 53 man, you wouldn't think the guy that you would release would be an offensive lineman. Now, having said that, if you think that offensive lineman is the guy who's going to clear waivers and you want to play that game, maybe you make that decision. But this is a tough one here. And I also wonder if a guy like Ligurski, who they initially thought might be good to go this week, if you say, all right, well, we're going to roll the dice. And if Ligurski goes, he's going to be not 100%, but he's not going to be in a position to damage himself further. It might be a guy that we'd rather not have in there. But if that's the question of that or losing a guy off the 53-man roster, we're willing to roll the dice there. So, yeah, this will be interesting to watch here over the next, as you said, kind of really the next 24 hours. At this point tomorrow, that decision should probably have been made.
You bring up a good point too. You know, if Ligurski's not real bad, can be used in an emergency situation, maybe you dress him as the emergency backup center, you know, break the glass, you know, break in case of emergency type situation. But you know, the thing with Chris Scott, you know, he's looked awful in the preseason. Jamon Meredith, the guy that will dress, should be able to be a swing guy at both guard and tackle. Travis Turner, to me, would make a better option of a tackle than Chris Scott would, because I view Chris Scott as more of a interior guy, a bad one at that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he handles this, because, you know, if you release a guy like Chris Carter, you run into a situation like they ran in with Thaddeus Gibson last year. Do you expose this guy to waivers, and Carter's a fifth-round draft pick? You expose him to waivers, hamstring injury and all, and hope he doesn't get claimed off of waivers, you know? So,
Dave, just reading the tea leaves, I don't have any inside knowledge on this, but my sense is they like Chris Carter a little bit better than they like Thaddeus Gibson last year. Just from the talk about the buzz around Chris Carter in camp, seemed to be that this guy, he needed to get up to NFL speed and kind of the level of NFL stuff. But in terms of athleticism, they really felt good about this guy. I'm not sure I ever really heard that about Thaddeus Gibson. Doesn't mean they didn't like Thaddeus Gibson last year, but I'm not sure that I ever really heard that about
him.
Well,
you know, they needed a spot, though. You had Aaron Smith and Brett Kiesel, you know, down last year at that, you know, when they had to get McClendon off of the practice squad there. So he was just a low man on the totem pole. I wouldn't say that they weren't. Well, I mean, let's face it. He's been with the 49ers and the Redskins, I think, and been released. I think he's actually a free agent at last report. I'm not sure if he's gotten signed by anybody else right now. So if they liked him that much, you would think by now he'd been back on a practice squad, but right. You know, with us. But it's going to be interesting, and I'm almost, you know, half convinced that there's not going to be a move made at all this weekend. So Chris Scott to me would be the guy, but you can't do that if you want to dress 8 healthy linemen.
All right. Well, then, Dave, how do we think they're going to come out in series number one? Is it going to be Trey at the left guard? At the left tackle, and Willie Foster at right guard.
Ramon Foster at right guard. Yeah. Trey Essex at left tackle. Ramon Foster at right guard. Of course, Gilbert. He wasn't even on the injury report with that shoulder injury he suffered against the Colts. So he's your right tackle. That's the way they're going to line up. Kimo Otto, of course, at left guard. But, you know, let's face it, he's not 100% either, even though he's practicing all. You worry about that knee with him. Pouncey's, of course, has been dinged early, you know, in the year with the ankle. It's just not a healthy group right now, and maybe Tomlin wants to dress 8. You know, a lot of people are rooting for Travis Turner, though. You know, everybody likes the young guy, you know, see what they have. And I know a lot of people are rooting for him to get activated, you know, from the practice squad. But I don't know. It's going to be tough sledding. Essex versus Mario Williams is going to be interesting to watch.
I'll tell you, the starting offensive line with Essex at left tackle and Foster at right guard, you know, that doesn't cause me to blanch. I mean, you know, we saw Foster play a lot last year. Essex is a serviceable guy. It's not obviously he's not the guy they put in there first, so they don't think he's the best guy. But, you know, that line is – it's fine. I don't go into the game and say this is a disaster. The problem is there's no depth behind that line, zero. I mean, literally zero depth behind that line. So that's the real issue that that we're going to face here in this game.
I tell you real quick though, you know, Essex, at least Mario's not really known as a speed rusher guy. He's more of a physical, defensive end slash linebacker in their system. So, you know, it's not a big worry about Essex being beaten around the end. It's just, we're really going to test his strength. I think where the real problem where the Steelers are going to run into possibly this week is actually the guard positions with Kimoatu and Foster. And especially when the Texans are in, you know, sort of a nickel situation, and they kick those Watt and all inside a little bit there. I think that's where your weakest link's going to be this week, if there is one. So, you know, hopefully the Steelers be able to run the ball well and not have to pass as much and keep them guessing as far as getting in the nickel and into their base in the 3-4. So,
yep. Dave, some finds this week. We talked about this before we started broadcasting. The Antonio Brown got fined $7,500 for the low hit on the interception that Manny Sanders didn't touch the guy down. I think he should ask Manny for half the money there. and then you let me know that James Ferrier got fined $15,000 for the hit on Kerry Collins. Two things. One is the hit on Collins wasn't flagged. Should have been. I don't have any problem with that fine. The hit on Antonio, the fine on Antonio Brown was just a dumb play by Antonio. Probably doesn't know that rule. Trying to take out a blocker, blocked him below the waist. That's part of football. If we're going to say basically what it comes down to is, it seems to me now they have decided that every personal foul should be a fine. And all of a sudden here, I mean, you know, nobody's come out and really talked about that aspect of things, that every personal foul now seems to get fined. Are we going a little too far here?
A little is an understatement. I think we've gone way too far. Like you said, a lot of these guys, man, it's football, you know, and a lot of these are getting crazy. Like the block on Brown. Here's what I think a fine should be. If it looks like intent and an egregious act to injure, you know, launching yourself type of things, I'm fine with that. But some of these things are kind of inadvertent. Now, the Troy Polamalu horse collar tackle, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, that's the heat of a moment type of act, in my opinion. The Ligurski clip from behind, okay, I can half kind of go along with that. Maybe the Farrier type thing from this past week, you know. In fact, I was surprised it wasn't penalized. I called on my blog a few days ago that I thought that Farrier would end up getting fined for that, and he did. But, yeah, you're right. It almost seems like every personal foul is getting a fine. And, man, these guys are going to be afraid to hit anybody here pretty soon. And, boy, the offense, if the offense didn't have an advantage already over the defense, boy, they're really going to start having an advantage here going forward.
Yep. I don't know the right answer. I mean, you definitely want to enforce the rules. This is a way of getting, it's a very simple way of getting people's attention and making sure behavior is changed by hitting them in the pocketbook. And at the end of the day, I do think we've seen a change in the way players play football since a year ago at this time. And overall, I think that's probably a positive thing. And I think the players probably think it's a positive thing, as much as they're going to bitch about it. And as much as, you know, guys are not going to like any fine imposed upon them. But generally, I'm not opposed to the process, but I'm opposed to maybe how they've presented the process. I don't know that. Why not just come out and say, look, if you get a personal foul, it's a minimum $7,500 fine, and then we go from there. You know, what I want to see is if two guys. I can't remember. We've had a couple instances so far this year where we've had guys, you know, basically having the standard scrap, the cornerback and the wide receiver. I remember one with Andre Johnson last year. Are they finding stuff like that as far as you know?
I would have to look back. Well, you know, what's his name? Got Charles Woodson got fined for the punch, you know. In fact.
Yeah, right. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. How much
I think it was actually less than Troy's. I think he was fined $10,000 for the punch, and Troy was fined $15,000 for a horse collar, and Ike Taylor was fined for a headbutt. You know, there's just no rhyme or reason, it seems. And
Right.
you know, NFL.com had that sort of that find chart up and all, you know, almost like a menu of sorts that you could order off of. But you know, I think there's still gray area there. Why not just put a standardized menu out there, post it in all the locker rooms, and you know, let a player choose what he wants to get that week, you know? But it's crazy, and it's really taken away from a game. But look at some of these young kids like Brown and all like that, you know, on rookie contracts making, you know, and I don't want to make it sound like $300,000 is the guy's going to be down getting a welfare check anytime soon. But you know, a couple of fines during the season, you know, $15,000-$30,000 real quick, and this guy's that's a quite a chunk of money. That's 10% of this guy's paycheck. I mean, salary almost, you know.
We start getting up there when you know you pick up two 15K fines and it's real, it's as they say that, now we're talking real money. All right, Dave, well, let's get into this. I know you did a lot of the breakdown yesterday with the beat reporter getting some background, but the Steelers offense, they have the ball, they've had trouble running the ball. I expect them to come out. Look, they want to be a balanced attack. Clearly, they've shown they can move the ball through the air, and they're never going to, at this point in this season, they're never going to turn to be a run-focused team. But again, this team wants to be balanced, and they're going to try, I'm sure, again, to at least show that they can move the ball a little bit on the ground. Do you agree with
Yes, I
that?
do, and I think you're going to see it kind of get shifted back to the basics this week, especially if the line's jumbled up like it looks like it's going to be. I would say not a lot of misdirection going on this week. I expect them to run in between the tackles and kind of attack Cody and Smith right up the middle. You know, go after Cushing, Ryans, and Barwin, make their linebackers come up and you know, just man on man and go, you know, this week. None of this, you know, Mendenhall dancing, trying to get into the hole. I would actually like to see Redmond get, you know, sneak into his carries this week as well. I think they, you know, of course, I thought they were going to be able to run on the Colts last week, but I think they will be able to run on the Texans this week, or at least enough to bring play action into play with the Steelers, because I think if they're able to run with any type of success, you know, against the Texans, they're going to get you know, Manning to bite on some stuff at safety and Quinn on up in the box maybe on some play action fakes, and I think, you know, it'll open up the opportunity A in not only the middle part of the field of the Texans defense, but you know, maybe a few home run balls to either Brown or Mike Wallace.
Just in terms of sets, same type of stuff we've seen so far this season. A lot of two tight end sets, three wide receiver sets. Those are going to be the two basic offensive sets, wouldn't you
Yeah,
think?
I think you're going to see a lot of 12 personnel, a lot of 11 personnel, with one and two tight ends. Something that we saw this past week was, you know, three wide receivers and the two tight ends standing up for a few plays, and both those tight ends standing up were Wesley Saunders and Heath Miller. So, you know, that's something that we've talked about in the past that the Patriots are implementing and working good on offense. So, you know, I think they're going to help the tackles some with the tight ends. But yeah, I see a lot of 11 and 12 personnel, not so many, so much empty set. Stuff seems like they kind of got away from that a little bit, which is good. You know, there will be times when there'll be five wides out there, maybe, or at least four. But there will, you know, it'll be few and far between. But yeah, I expect some, you know, some run packages, or at least some personnel groupings that gives you a run pass option in there, you know.
So, I mean, I think we know where the Steeler offense is right now and what they need to do. Let's talk about this Texans offense. Ben Tate did a really good job filling in for Arian Foster. I think he was averaging just over 100 yards a game in his three starts. But it looks like Foster's going to be the guy this weekend.
Yeah, and I talked to Nick Schofield in my interview yesterday, and you know, he says Foster's going to be back, and I know what Foster brings to the table, but I wanted to have him tell me, you know, what do they gain from having Arian Foster in there that Ben Tate doesn't give him. And he pretty much said, and we've seen this from Foster last year, is his ability to you know, catch the passes out of the backfield. He's a much better short yardage red zone runner. I forget the stat on this, but he, you know, he has hardly any runs for negative yardage, especially in the red zone type areas and all. So, you know, he's a guy that will be able to get them 1 or 2 or 3 yards when they need it the most. And, you know, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So I would suspect, and Nick also told me he doesn't expect, you know, Foster just to be eased in. He expects him to get a pretty good load this week out, you know, because they were pretty careful with him last week against the Saints and all. So I really think you're going to see them try to run to do the same thing that the Steelers are going to do, try to set up some play action, get their tight ends involved, and, of course, get the ball to Andre Johnson as well.
There's no question coming into this game versus any of the three games that the Steelers have played so far. This is the offense that, to me, is by far the most dangerous. Now, the Ravens did a lot of damage, but I didn't see that coming. I'm not sure many people saw that coming. This team, I'm not gonna be at all. It's not gonna make me blink if they score 30 points. They've got, I mean, we've talked about it over the course of this week. They've got weapons. Mike Tomlin said it right. Andre Johnson's maybe the best receiver in the world. They've got a very established, good tight end in Owen Daniels, and they've got a rookie who's done some really nice work. I think they're second, third, fourth wide receivers. They're league average kind of guys, or maybe even a tad below that, but they're not terrible. And then if Foster's healthy, I don't know that he's proven he's an all-pro back, but he's put up some big numbers in the past, and I am a huge Matt Schaub fan. I think this guy is on the, just as I've said, on the verge of that elite group. How do the Steelers look to counteract this?
Good question, because let me tell you, if you know, going back and watching their games this year, that offensive line of theirs and their zone blocking, the way they move like a machine, you know, from side.
Yeah, and that, I think I neglected saying that, and you have pointed this out before, that, and I've seen this said by Matt Williamson, that this might be one of the three best offensive lines in the league. And I talked about all the skill guys, but this is an area of expertise that you have that more than most. And you love these.
Yeah,
guys,
right? I absolutely love them. They can cut block with the best of them. Imagine the way the Ravens played in week one with their offensive line that had no cohesiveness whatsoever. And the way they kind of moved from side to side, they actually moved good in unison. And of course, we all know about the cut and the chop blocks. This team does it on steroids, it looks like. I mean, it looks like a tank that moves from side to side. The way they can wash people out and all. So it's going to be hard. I think you're going to have to quite a few probably run blitzes, so to speak, have some guys crowd in the line of scrimmage and try to shoot some of these gaps here, because they'll try to spread you out too with the with a stretch play here and there as well. And Foster's, if that hamstring's okay, he's more than capable of getting that done. It's going to be it starts with stopping the run. You know, they're going to leave Ike Taylor, of course, out there on the island with Andre Johnson. You're going to have the other two receivers there, which you hit it best on them with Walter and all. They're average wide receivers, but it's not like they, you know, going against the likes of maybe William Gay and Keenan Lewis, who William Gay is going to start over McFadden again this week. There's going to be some matchup problems here, and I tell you what can kill you the most, especially if these linebackers get caught up inside trying to protect against the run, is that Owen Daniels could have a huge game across the middle. And if they use their tight ends the way the Ravens use their tight ends in week one, you know, they'll just keep running Andre Johnson deep and one of the other speed guys deep, kind of clear out the middle area of the field, and Schaub should be able to pick and choose what he wants underneath if he puts the ball in the window.
Yep. It is going to be interesting. Certainly we expect Ike to follow Andre. I'm interested to see how they play Troy this week, because one of the things that we've touched on here is this is a balanced offense that can do things a lot of different ways. And I think I was surprised we didn't see more of Troy in the box against the Ravens, and the fact that the Ravens ran the ball effectively and then ran those drag routes with the tight ends and pretty much did what they wanted. But I really thought Troy's game last week was as good a game as I've seen him play in a long time. And I like the fact that they moved him around a lot and let him freelance. And obviously that's what he does best. But against this offense, if Troy's out of position in the secondary, whatever that may be, if he's freelancing and he gets caught, the chance for big plays is much more than the two teams they played the last 2 weeks, the Colts and the Seahawks. You know, you pointed this out in the Ravens game. Steelers don't want to give up the big plays, so that may mean that Troy Freelance is less this week. So that's going to be, for me, the focus on watching this defense is how Dick LeBeau lets Troy Freelance and how he decides to play either down in the box or way back in the secondary.
You know what I also – what I think a key part of this game will be for the Steelers defense is stopping the Texans on first down. Okay, I think if you can stop them on first down, you know, to 2 or 3 yards, and set them up in some situations where you know have a good idea that they're probably going to pass. Of course, you want to try to keep them in a third and long situation as well. You know, that goes without saying in every game, you know, but I think if you can get, maybe, you know, like you said, I think you're going to have Troy up towards the line of scrimmage a lot, freelancing a lot this week to try to, you know, get inside of one of those gaps or, you know, squeak on the backside and track down, you know, Foster, you know, running around the edge or whatnot. But I think the key is stopping this Texans offense on first down, and it's easier said than done. It's going to be interesting how Dick LeBeau draws this thing up again, you know, this week against such a good offensive line and, you know, fairly good skill positions too.
Yep. And then just to touch on the Texans defense, Wade Phillips, he's got two new guys in the secondary, and Daniel Manning from the Bears playing safety, Jonathan Joseph from the Bengals at corner. You know, you can throw last week out. Drew Brees is one of those guys. You know, there are four guys in the league or five guys in the league with Brady and Rodgers and who are just precision passers, and he picked them apart in the fourth quarter. They put up 23 points and lost that game. But, you know, this is a big game for both teams, and it's a big game for the Texans defense. They've got to show their fans and themselves that they can bounce back at home against a quality team. I think this is the bigger game for the Texans than the Steelers. If they win this game at home and 3-1, I think they really put themselves squarely in the playoff picture and squarely amongst the elite in the AFC. For the Steelers, they lose this game on the road a little bit banged up. They're 2-2. The schedule gets softer. Now, if you're a Steeler fan, it's going to raise some red flags, but I don't think it's hit the panic button. But this game it really does have big impact for both teams.
You know, Joseph is good on the corner for them. He knows a lot about the Steelers from his time with the Bengals. Manning, to me, you know, I think this guy can be thrown at. Quinn, I'm not overly impressed with his play at strong safety thus far. And their linebackers, to me, you know, even though you got the big name of Cushing in there, to me, I'm not overly impressed. You know, I think Williams...
I'm with you on that, on Cushing. Yeah.
You know, now, of course, Williams, I think he's going to be deadliest, of course, as a pass rusher on passing downs. The Steelers have to be able to run the ball, as I mentioned earlier, with just some sort of limited success. They can't have, you know, hopefully they don't get down early and get into an all-passing type situation. So that, of course, means let's not turn the ball over on offense. If you do that, I think, and you mentioned the elite quarterbacks, you know, the Brees and the Aaron Rodgers and all, you know, Ben's in that, almost in that category too. Okay, he can put the ball in the window. He's bailed them out on third downs this year. I've got the stats around here somewhere, you know, on how effective he has been thus far, bailing them out on third downs and longs. In fact, right here, I think on third and seven or more this year, when Ben has actually got an attempt off, he's 11 of 19 for 219 yards. Believe 10 first downs, which is 58%, it's 58% completion percentage, and he's completed 53% of those have been converted into first downs on top of that. And with quarterbacks compared to the other quarterbacks through 3 weeks, albeit, you know, of course, it's a small sample size, not many of them have as many attempts in that category, but he's only behind Drew Brees in that area. Brees has 56% conversion of third downs of third and seven when he's gotten an attempt off. So, you know, if they're able to get himself in a little bit less predictable down and distances here and don't rely so terribly much on the pass early in the game, I think they can hang with him. I think the Steelers definitely want to slow this game down a little bit, you know, as opposed to just saying, okay, let's have a Texas shootout.
Yep. Yep. Very good point. And that's definitely true about Ben, being a guy who can get it done, does it a little differently, but certainly does get it done. And as you say, the stats bear that out. Dave, anything special teams wise that stands out? I mean, the big issue for the Texans, obviously, so far this year has been their red zone offense. Has it gotten it done? You don't really want to see your kicker leading the league in field goals 3 weeks in with nine. I think Rackers has nine field goals. He's an excellent kicker, a big leg. But, you know, that kind of bodes well for the Steelers because that has been their MO during the Dick LeBeau era. Is, you know, they're not concerned necessarily about giving up yards. They're concerned about giving up points. And we saw it in the Indy game. It made a big difference. Indianapolis down there twice inside the 10, didn't get touchdowns. They got field goals. And, you know, hopefully we see more of that this week.
Yeah, their red zone percentage is struggling at 31.25. You asked about their special teams. They actually have a pretty good special teams unit, especially in their return games, because their average, I think, is like 18.9 in the punt return, and in the kickoff return average, actually 34.3, I believe. And both of those rankings are good for third in the NFL. On the other side of the ball, as far as what they're doing, they're allowing only 9 yards punt return average and 25.5 yards kick return average. You know, the kick return average, of course, is a little bit high. You know, it ranks them around 22nd in the league. Their punt return average allowed is 15th in the league. So, you know, let's hope. I mean, the Steelers could actually turn this game on a dime, you know, with a big return from there. I don't need to tell everybody how effective Antonio Brown has been in these areas right now. So, you know, maybe this is an area they can get the upper hand this week if they can shut down the Texans part of the return game. We mentioned at the top of the show about Arnez Battle might be out. That's their special teams captain guy there. So, and if Chris Carter, another guy who was activated last week, might be down as well, or might even be a guy that's dropped, you know, Turner's activated. You're going to lose a couple special teams guys there. So Al Everest has got to have these guys in on the screws. And I think it could, you know, I think the Steelers could have a big impact on this game with a couple of large returns.
Yep. I agree with that. And as you say, Antonio Brown has been a guy who just looks like at any point in time, he can make that happen. All right, Dave, well, let's get into our picks for the week. Some really good games, a couple dogs, as always. But I think we've been pretty good at nailing these things. A couple differences last week. I'm gonna give you a hard time about the Falcons because I've not been quite the buyer you are. And we saw the Jets and the Pats go down. But this week, right out of the chute, the first game on the board is the Lions. Another stunning comeback in Minnesota, down 20-0, win that game against the Cowboys. You had a very gutsy performance from Tony Romo. They're off to a decent start. Of course, the game they lost the prior week stings them a little bit. They're at home against Detroit. This is an interesting game. The boys are a 1.5-point favorite. I'm going to go out and say Detroit goes down and wins this game and starts 4-0, but I expect it to be a
first of all, the way you open this segment up, you must my picks were not good last week. The man got me. I was chasing money all the way up until Monday night, and I turned –
And you snuck it out with Washington.
Yeah, and I was able to make a horrible weekend, just a weekend, you know, because I was chasing. Don't do that, whatever you do. Don't run around chasing money. But I've been pretty awful with these things through 3 weeks. I'm way off my game for some reason, and I don't know what's up. But to the, we'll see what we can do this week here. You might want to fade me until the meantime. You know what? I like what the Cowboys do with their passing game. Felix Jones is coming alive. Not taking anything away from the Lions here, man. They've been absolutely fantastic. This game could have some scoring in it, I think, in the end. I think the Cowboys at home cover this. Give me the Cowboys. Lay the points.
All right. Saints at the Jaguars. Saints -7. You know, Blaine Gabbert, a quarterback, a rookie. Seven doesn't seem like enough. It feels like the Saints – more so at home, but it feels like the Saints can put up 35 points anytime they want to. I don't love the game, but I'd certainly lay the 7.
I would lay the 7 I would lay the 7 as well, even though they're on the road. They might get Colston back this week from that collarbone injury, and he's, I think, slated 40 to 50 plays, hopefully, for them on the field this week. I just don't see how Jacksonville can score with him. I know the Saints' defense hasn't been all terribly that, but I don't see how this one is close. To me, this seems like a sure thing. Saints lay the points.
Yeah, San Francisco comes east for the second week in a row. They got a win last week in Cincinnati and a cover late. They got the Eagles this week with 9. This is a non-touch game for me. If I had to do it, I'd certainly lay the points just because the team's coming east 2 weeks in a row. But I don't think San Francisco's a terrible team. Mike Vick's a little banged up. I'd lay the points if I had
to. I'd lay the points as well. I think Frank Gore's a little banged up for them on offense. You know, San Francisco's been beneficial of a pretty easy schedule to start things up. That game last week was just flat out ugly of theirs. But the Eagles, as long as Vic's in there and able to throw and move around, I think they'll be fine. I mean, 9 points is a lot, but like you mentioned, they're coming east a couple of times. I think that'll wear on them. Give me the Eagles, lay the points.
Washington's at St. Louis, laying 2, coming off a Monday night game. I'll take the home team, Sam Bradford, see if he can get it done, get their first win. I'll take
the
points.
I tell you, the Rams, I really thought the Rams would have had a better start to the season than what they have. They're turning the ball over, to giving up big plays. That being said, they got to rebound at some point. I think they're a better team than what they've shown. Give me the Rams plus the points.
Tennessee at Cleveland. This would be an interesting game because the Steelers are going to play both these teams. Obviously, the Browns twice. I think Tennessee has started better than I anticipated. I think Cleveland's a team that's getting better. This is pick at Cleveland. I generally like the Browns, but I'm going to go against them this week and take Tennessee. I think Matt Hasselbeck has been pretty good. Losing Kenny Britt's obviously a big blow. But I like Hasselbeck, and I like I just think CJ's probably due for a good game. It'll be interesting to see if they try to pound it against that Browns run defense. But I'll take the away team.
I'm going to take the home Browns here, Ben, for the sheer fact that I think the secondary of the Browns is actually will be able to cover what's left for the Titans at wide receiver, Nate Washington and all. I just think that might be the difference of the game. I think this might be a low-scoring game. I'll take the Browns to maybe chip shot field goal at the end to win this.
Another division game, Buffalo's at Cincinnati. We haven't seen Cincinnati have a stinker yet, but we did see them have a stinker from their fans last week. I think that Paul Brown Stadium or whatever they call it is seats 65, and they had something like 43 in there. And I tweeted about that, and I didn't know if I was looking at the just post-halftime. The crowd hadn't filled back into the seats. But you don't see an NFL stadium very often that's not in the deep south, basically, not filled. Just particularly early in the season on a beautiful sunny day. And that was a telling sign to me. Something's not right in Cincinnati. I don't think their team's good. I think they've played better than I expected so far. The Bills are the other feel-good story along with the Lions. I'll lay the 3 here and assume that they're going to put up 35
again.
Yeah,
Joe Reedy had a great column in the Cincinnati Inquirer about what you talked about there, and it looks like the Bengals are going to be blacked out again this week. In fact, I think it's already been called. It's going to be a blackout there. You know, maybe the Bills have a little bit of a letdown maybe this week after such a big win against the Patriots last week. But still, I mean, I think the Bengals have some injuries in the secondary. I thought I heard where maybe that Taylor Mays kid might even start at the safety, you know, one of the safety spots this week as well. The Bills offense can move the ball. I think 3 points is easy here. Give me the Bills, lay the 3.
Vikes at Chiefs. I'll just go back to the Washington St. Louis game. The Chiefs are not great, but they're not terrible. They certainly have been worse than people expected. They've had some big injuries. You know, the Vikings have marquee names, but they've blown 3 late leads. Maybe they're due. But the Chiefs are due, too. I'll take the home team getting
the points.
I want
the Vikings, and I'll lay the points here. Chiefs, to me, they just look horrible right now. They look like a defeated team. Give me the Vikings, lay the 2.
The Bears at the Panthers, Panthers at the Bears. This line doesn't seem right to me. Cam Newton has had a pretty good start. the Bears are a better team than 6.5. I think they win this by 2 touchdowns. 6.5, you know, all day long.
Yeah, I like the Bears in this too, and I think something's wrong here as well. This is not a game that I'm going to play right here because I want to see both teams a couple more weeks from just the inconsistencies on both sides of the ball. You know, Julius Peppers, he could have a huge game in this, and Cam Newton, I think, was kind of tongue-in-cheek about him with one of the comments that he made this past week, and that guy can get after you in a hurry. I think the only way the Panthers stay close in this is if Cam Newton runs for his life, and that very well could be the case. But in the meantime, give me the Bears later points.
All right, we'll come back to the Steelers. Falcons at the Seahawks again. This is a time I think we'll see your Falcons get it together, get points on the board. The Seahawks get a nice win for them at home against Arizona last weekend. That means they're not going to go winless. But that's pretty much how I look at that team. I mean, they're going to get healthy. They'll get a couple guys back. But I'll take the Falcons laying 4.5. I think they win by more than the touchdown.
Yeah, I'm going to lay the points here too. But, you know, Matt Ryan's got – these guys have got to win on the road if they're going to be in the playoffs this year. He's fine at home. But, you know, I think it's just when you stack these two teams up across the board here talent-wise, you know, the Falcons have just – all they have to do is make sure they keep people out of the face of Matt Ryan. I think they'll be able to do that against the Seahawks this week. So I expect an easy cover here. Falcons lay the points.
Giants at Cardinals. I just same thing. I'm going to play all week long. I'll take the home dog, getting one in a very close line.
I like this as well. I'm with you here. I think the Giants, you know, going out west here and all. This is a game the Cardinals have to have here, in my opinion. You know, to get back on the right track. So yeah, give me the Cardinals plus the point.
Miami is at San Diego. San Diego's laying 7. San Diego had, you know, again, a little bit of a slow start to the season. Didn't get the cover last week on a huge line. Had a surprisingly close game with the Chiefs. They burn me every year, and I'll let them continue to burn me. One of these weeks, they're going to put up 38, and maybe it's this week against the Dolphins. They're laying 7.
You read my mind, brother. I think this is the week that they get it on track here. You know, even with Gates kind of hobbled here and all, and I think the running back Matthews might be up or, you know, might be down this game or whatnot. So, but regardless, I think Phil Rivers can get this done. Chargers lay the points.
Green Bay, Denver, 12.5. The San Diego's a 4 o'clock game. The Arizona game and Seattle are 4 o'clock as well. This is a 4 o'clock game. 12.5. I don't love it, but I'd lay it. That Green Bay looks like at home. They could put up 35 like the Saints anytime they want. I don't know that Denver's offense is a team that can put up more than 17. I don't know that I'll play it, but 12.5 means the bookies aren't sure either. They can't decide whether to get it down to 10.5 or up to 13. So I bet at game time that goes to 13.
I'm actually showing 13 on my board right now, David, so I want that 13. I think Green Bay's given up some big plays. You know, I don't think they're able to, I think Denver's has the ability to at least move the ball down the field, for some big plays. And 13 is just way too much in my opinion. I want the Broncos plus those points.
For me, the marquee 4 o'clock game, Patriots Raiders, love this game. I think it'll be a great test. We saw the Raiders at home beat the Jets last weekend. I'm going to take the Raiders to win this game outright again. I am fully on the Raiders bandwagon. I'll take the 4 points.
Boy, if they're able to run the ball on top of it and get those, you know, speed on the outside, because I hate to keep bringing up the big plays, explosive plays, but, you know, that's the big buzzword in the NFL these days, that and turnovers. As long as the Raiders don't turn the ball over, they can stay close in this game, I have a feeling. So I don't think the Raiders win this. I think the Patriots win outright. But, you know, I can get these points here 4.5, and I want them. Give me 4.5 on the Raiders at home.
Jets Ravens. So we got good 4 o'clock, we got good 8 o'clock Sunday night game. 3.5 is the line I'm seeing. Baltimore favored. You know, you can't root for either team, but you got to root for the team that's not in your division. So I guess the rooting interest is with the Jets. Hopefully I'm not doing any chasing Sunday night, Dave, and if that's the case, I'm going to watch as an interested spectator and a non-participant.
I hear you. My rooting interest will be with the Jets. But, you know, the way Oakland ran all over the Jets last week and the way the Ravens are able to move the ball both on the ground and the air right now, I think it's going to come down to turnovers in this game. And I think the Ravens will be able to cause a few in this game. I want the Ravens, and I'm laying the 4, brother.
Good stuff. This excuse me, the Monday night game is less of a marquee game than they thought at the beginning of the season, obviously, with Peyton Manning gone. The Colts get two in a row of prime time. It was just tweeted by our boy who was on the podcast 2 weeks ago, whose name is escaping me, the beat writer Phil Wilson, right? He just tweeted that Kerry Collins, 2 days missed practice, that it'll be tough for him to reclaim the starting role. So that means Curtis Painter is going to get the nod on Monday night against Tampa in Tampa. The Colts aren't going to be able to do what they did against the Steelers on the road. 10 is a big number. I'm not very enthusiastic about the game, but I think on the road, much tougher thing for Curtis Painter to get this done. I think maybe they get smoked.
I think they get smoked as well, too. Tampa hasn't really shown, you know, what we think they can be this year. I really like that Freeman kid, though. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think that, you know, if they're able to run the ball effectively the way the Steelers should have done, which I think they will be able to do, they'll control this game, perhaps get a turnover here, or, you know, maybe one back, return back for a touchdown. Buccaneers lay the points.
Yep. All right. And the big game, the Steelers and the Texans. I don't know that in the year that we've been doing these podcasts that I've actually picked the Steelers to lose a game. Obviously, I don't want the Steelers to lose a game, but this is a tough one. I think the Steelers maybe get the cover. I'd love to get 4. I'm seeing 3.5 now. I think the Texans win this game 27-24.
Wow. I don't think I've ever picked against the Steelers either. This is a game. You know, we broke it on down a few things. If the Steelers do not turn the ball over this week, I think they can, and if they can run with any inkling of success this week, I think they can hang with them. Of course, I'm a homer. My glasses are on right now. I'm not picking against the Steelers this week. I think this is a close game. I think Ben drives them down for a game-winning field goal with time running off the clock here. You know, maybe a 45-yarder by Swisham here at the end. 28-27. Steelers, give me the Steelers plus the 4, and I actually can get the 4 here.
Yeah, well, I'm rooting for you to be right on this one. Dave, that's going to wrap it up here on episode 23. Anything we want to close out with in terms of big picture stuff? You can follow us on Twitter at Terrible Podcast. You can email us, theterriblepodcast.com. We got a great question from one of our listeners. Unfortunately, we're out of time today, but we will get to that on Monday. It's good stuff about the Steeler defense and Dick LeBeau and how they're doing things. And we'll have another data point this week to kind of further analyze that. Anything else to add? Follow Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks. Dave, you want to close
this
out?
I just like
here?
To thank everybody for all the support and all the Terrible Podcast Twitter account now. It has over 1,000 followers. So help David out as well to get him some followers.
Yeah, what the hell are you people doing? not following the Hammer Speaks. What's going
follow
on?
At Hammer Speaks and my other boys that kind of help out with the site. I kind of give them a plug here and there, too. Make sure you follow them. We work hard at what we do, and we appreciate your support, getting great feedback with this podcast. And go Steelers.
All right, my man. Good stuff, as always. And hopefully we're back on Monday talking about a Steeler victory. You've been listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, episode 23 of season 2.